show about?
Megan, let's do a show this week, and this week only, about Magic the Gathering. What do you think?
Oh, that sounds reasonable.
You were right on board with that.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I know that that's something that we've never tried before, doing a show about Magic the Gathering, even though our name is Magic the Amateuring.
No, we've never tried it.
No, it's always just been about amateur magicians.
Yeah, but this week I thought, hey, let's get crazy.
Yeah, everyone always thinks that we're related to that card game.
Oh, yeah. But Magic the Gathering? What is
Magic
that?
But here we are. We're going to talk about it.
All right. Let's do
Magic,
it.
Magic the Gathering from Magic the Amateuring.
Hey, everybody. My name's Maria. I'm one of your hosts of Magic the Amateuring.
My name's Megan, another host of Magic the Amateuring. And I just realized that it could be legitimately confusing to someone who has never listened to this podcast before. Maybe they're like, are they really actually a podcast about amateur magicians? Just want to clear up. That was a bit. We were doing a bit.
Yeah. Somebody's like, I finally found the podcast I need for my magic career. And then they're
they go back through our backlog of episodes and they're like, why are none of these about amateur magic?
They were so hopeful we crushed their dreams.
I want to know now if there is an amateur magic podcast.
Of course there is. Of course there is. There's a podcast for everything. I'm sure there's a podcast for, like, you know, teeth.
Yeah, that's just your typical dentistry podcast, Maria.
There is a podcast for the U.S. Postal Service. What? I know that.
What does it talk about? Just like, the life. How long is your mail going to take today? Well, today the mail room's running slow, so your letters might be a day later than usual.
It's like four postal workers. Like, oh man, one fuck of a snowfall this past weekend, eh? Oh yeah, just kidding, it's not that local, but I mean, they just chat about the problems of the job, you know.
Oh, that's actually, I'm going to go look that up.
Yeah, it's actually pretty good.
All right, now I know.
Anyway, on our episode this week, we're going to continue our discussion fairly briefly, hopefully, because that we were talking about last week, which was women in magic, and the reaction to Megan's article, the rebuttal of Megan's article, and the rebuttal of the rebuttal of Megan's article.
And now the rebuttal to the rebuttals, to the rebuttal to the original.
There's a lot of butts up in this club is what we're saying.
There really are. There's a lot of apple bottom jeans.
And boots with the fur.
A couple pairs of boots with fur.
Yeah, what we're trying to say is we've been talking about this a lot, and so we want to actually talk about what we're supposed to talk about on the show.
Yeah, which is, I mean, cards. We're also going to talk about playing the game of Magic, not only because, you know, we want to give you guys lots of variety in content, but because this conversation is slowly crushing our souls, so we need to take a step back. We need
just a break. We need a break.
Exactly. We're going to go swim a couple of laps, take a jog, you know. Just,
I'm going to chow down on some microwave popcorn.
Yeah, we're going to take a break and, you know, we'll come back to it in the future. But we need to cool our jets.
We've got a special guest who will be joining us for that discussion, however, so that's really exciting.
That is super exciting. We're excited.
Then we're going to do some origins. We're going to talk about origins. The pre-release is coming up pretty soon.
Yeah, it surely is.
So pretty exciting. Some awesome new cards out there. And we're also going to go over some new changes, potential changes to mulligan rules, as well as coverage, the way that players lay out their game states and coverage.
Absolutely. Now that I think about it, the pre-release is not this coming weekend, but the weekend after.
Yeah.
Holy F.
Yeah, if you guys want to know, our rules show with Judge Rob is coming up next week, so make sure you listen next week if you want to get the lowdown on all the new sort of card interactions and rules and terms and whatnot for Origins coming up next Tuesday.
Word.
But for now, this episode. Ready, set, go.
Hey everybody, this week we've got a returning guest, you know, one of the real ballers of the streaming world, I would say. It's everybody welcome Doc.
Yay, welcome Doc.
Hi, thanks.
I was legitimately waiting for like a welcome from other people.
Were you waiting for applause or something?
I was waiting for a bunch of people to shout welcome.
You could pipe that in.
Oh my God.
Doc's been on our show before. If you want to listen to an episode with him, go back in our archives. We learn all about his history being an amazing streamer. Usually streams late night on Twitch. But he's with us this week to help us out to play the role of the gentleman on our show.
Yes, or the men.
Yeah.
Those who are have not yet earned the title of gentleman.
Quite right. Quite right.
I get the coveted role of white male landowner.
Yes, exactly.
Doc will be playing the role of white male landowner for this episode.
Cis hetero white male landowner at that.
Yes.
Oh, man, you've got a lot of you've won a lot of lotteries in your life already, yeah. Buddy.
Because so we've been talking a lot about Megan wrote an article for Star City Games about women in magic. Somebody else wrote another article that was kind of like negative about that article. We got a lot of feedback to our last episode where we discussed this extensively for more than an hour, in fact. Yes. And we did ask people to write us emails, which they did, which was wonderful.
Absolutely.
And we said we would talk about them if they were civil, which they all were. So that was lovely to see.
Absolutely. Thank you all for being civil.
And I'm surprised. That's pretty good.
No, I was surprised as well. The amount of feedback was overwhelmingly positive, but some people wrote in and still had questions. And they Absolutely. Were, you know, we want to answer those questions. We want to address that.
Yeah, and we just, you know, we run with a civil crowd, even when they disagree, man. That's real nice.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about some of these questions that we got, and people actually also emailed you, Doc, about this stuff too, didn't they?
Yeah, I got a couple emails and some questions about my opinions on the matter and how I sort of thought the whole thing was playing out, because when I saw the one of these articles go up that I didn't particularly like, I asked the editors of the site that hosted it to take the content down, and I thought it was not a good idea in terms of public image for them, and maybe that it would be better served as a discussion had between people elsewhere, as opposed to something that somebody could stumble upon by accident and be sort of have their day hosed by it.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, my day was hosed for yeah. sure.
Yes, it was.
Is that something only people who live in the north say?
Hosed?
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually learned. I learned that it has like Canadian origins, right?
Oh, or
like
yeah.
Hockey
Take
origins.
Off, you hoser.
What's a hoser though?
It has to do with hockey rinks and hoses.
Yep. Oh, because you're sitting there icing them all night long.
Yep, something like that. Don't look at me like I play hockey.
Look, I should know this. My dad won Coach of the Year like 100 times.
Oh, congratulations to your dad. Doc, can you give us more specifics, actually? Just really quickly. I need to know this.
I don't know the etymology of hoser. Okay. I imagine it's the person who hoses yeah. a hockey rink. But I know that I picked it up in... from my Canadian relatives. I do have a Canadian passport, so I should probably know these things.
Oh. They're going to revoke it once they hear
yeah.
this podcast.
Yeah, I'm not going to go near the border for a little while after this.
They're going to be like, I'm sorry.
You're out. You're oot.
Yeah, oot. Exactly.
All right, so Doc's going to play the role of the white male landowner for us here and ask one of the first and probably one of the foremost questions we got in our emails, and then we're going to have a little chat about it.
Yeah, he'll also be playing dual roles this evening, because he's also going to be providing some of his own perspectives and thoughts on the issue. So there you go.
All right, hit it.
Okay, so Megan and Maria, I'm a white man and I grew up poor. I had no advantages. Why should women get a leg up when I had none myself?
So this is just a basic, I'm not directly quoting anybody with this question, but we had several people write into us and post on our website a question similar to this. And a lot of people gave us, you know, their life story about how, you know, bad they had it growing up. And, you know, they seemingly said to themselves, you know, I'm a white guy, but I had no advantages. I think a rich white lady would have way more advantages than I had. So why should you get what I see as preferential treatment?
And to be fair, like, yes, there are tons of different ways in society, that people can be privileged and or disadvantaged. But just because you have certain economic disadvantages in your life does not mean that you do not have the privileges that are associated with being a guy as opposed to a woman. Those still exist. And I think I don't necessarily always like to think about it in terms of like, oh, think of someone of the opposite gender in the same circumstances as you, because that does take a lot of variables out of it. Like, again, your economic situation growing up or at any given point in your life is a really important variable. But at the same time, again, it doesn't take away the advantages that you already have.
Sure. And this is something that I think is really interesting for people to look up, say, if you haven't ever thought about this before, because a lot of people, even if you, right, as Megan said, had some kind of economic disadvantages in your life, but you still were a white male, you are afforded a lot of privileges that maybe you don't even think about or maybe don't even notice. And if you Google something like, you know, the male privilege checklist, which I like made a little I made a little link to in this document we're looking at. I mean, it is so long. Yeah. It goes for hundreds and hundreds of, you know, just random things that you might not even think about. You know, like I can be loud with no fear of being called a shrew. I can be aggressive with no fear of being called a bitch.
Exactly. If you have a kid, in no matter what your economic circumstances, you don't need the same kinds of maternity leave that a woman having a kid needs. Women, like, you know, especially if it's like an hourly job and it's not a salaried position, like, and you don't have maternity leave and you're a woman having a child, like, as a guy, of course it sucks if you're not able to be around when you have a kid, but at the same time, you're not the one in the hospital having a baby who literally does not have the option of showing up to work because they are having a child right then. If you're a woman and you're
You also make more money at the job. Okay.
That's also true. I mean, we can always get into that. And like you said, like a lot of the things that you're allowed to say and the things that you're allowed to do without being called names for it. Someone posted this a couple of weeks ago. I have a friend who lives in New York City. And she was riding the train home at night, and it was like pretty late at night. It was like midnight or 1 a.m. And she's like, I'm sitting in this train car with all these guys, and they all have their headphones in. And I'm like, it must be fucking nice. Like, as a woman, and it's totally true, when I walk alone at night, or if I'm on public transportation at night, like, hell no, I would never consider myself safe enough to stop and listen to music. Like, I need to be looking around me all the time. I need to be listening around me all the time, because my chances of being like assaulted are so much higher, and I'm perceived as being so much more vulnerable in that kind of situation.
Here's another just really quick real life scenario. Megan and I do comedy when we're not doing this or working or going to hip hop dance class. Am I right?
Yeah.
Up top. Oh, that was the worst high five ever.
You guys can't see this on the podcast, but it wasn't close.
No, it really wasn't. It really wasn't.
Oh, God. So we do improv comedy. And let me tell you that every time I take that stage, I feel like, this might sound melodramatic, but I feel the burden of my sex. Like, Maria, you better do a good job, because you are representing for all women out there. Exactly. And all guys out there who don't think women are funny.
Yeah. And again, like, in the industry, we hear it all the time. Like, there are so many comedians who have publicly said, like, oh, I just don't think women can be funny.
Right.
So again, just like perceptions like that. Again, it's not at all to demean whatever struggles you've had. It's very true. Everyone has their struggles. But you can't use that to invalidate someone else's. Which brings us to, I think, like, the biggest point for me in this issue is, like, if you feel like there is a way in your life that you have been disadvantaged economically, socially, that's not an excuse to treat other people like crap. You shouldn't be pointing at yourself and saying, hey, I don't have advantages. I haven't been treated well. So therefore, you don't deserve to be treated well either. Like, no, I'm standing up for myself and I'm saying I should be treated well. And you know what? I believe that you should be treated well too. I think that the minimum wage should be higher. So if you are someone who is working a minimum wage job or has faced unemployment in their lives, like, that is something that I also personally very strongly believe in. And I'm not looking at my position and saying, like, I'm a woman and it's really crappy to be a woman. So therefore, if you're poor, like, you should just shut up and deal with it. Like, no, we should all be working together to raise each other up.
Right. One person's struggle does not make another person's struggle invalid.
Exactly.
I think it's the point. Did you have anything you wanted to add, Doc?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I sort of heard most commonly from male colleagues or something like that when talking about invisible, especially white male privilege, is that Well, I haven't seen it or whatever when I'm with my girlfriend or when I'm with my mother or when I'm with you know, my sister or whatever. And I mean, it isn't just sort of called invisible. It actually becomes invisible because of some of the sort of mechanisms of it, and a lot of those just don't come into play when you're around necessarily, right? I mean, I think it's pretty much, I've never been in the presence of, like, been actively standing with or walking with a woman who's gotten catcalled. That doesn't mean that it doesn't happen.
It is the worst.
Right. I mean, the fact that I'm with them is necessarily making it less likely, I think, because a lot of men will think, oh, he might get pissed at us, or I don't know what's going on in their heads, because I don't understand what could go on in your head to do it in the first place. But but it's invisible because you're not around for it. It doesn't exist because you're not around for it.
Sure. And
it's,
you know,
like if a tree falls in the woods and no one's around to hear it, does it make a noise? We're saying right now, like, yes, the tree makes a noise.
That bear does, in fact, poop in the woods.
Exactly.
Oh, God. Okay, so, yeah, this brings up sort of another question that we got in our email. Do you want to move on to the next one, Doc?
Sure. And this is, I guess, just sort of a general one. Can you speak to the lack of diversity in Magic the Gathering in general?
Sure, absolutely. So this is kind of a tag off of our first question that we have, because, you know, women, as women, and I think as Magic players in general, we should want the game to be more inclusive for everybody. And we had our good friend Leo wrote an article about this called Magic the Gathering Community Has a Diversity Problem. And you can read it on mtgsmart.com. We can also tweet out a link where he talks about it. And he goes in depth and has great statistics about what's going on right now. Again, I can't speak to his experience, but, you know, just from, like, looking at the world of Magic in general and the art on Magic cards in general, I can say that, yeah, there could probably be a better, there could be a more diverse field of peoples represented.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, not having the personal experience, it's hard, I can't say, like, oh, you know, it sucks, or like they are like anyone, say like a person of color who's trying to break into the magic community, I can easily imagine that they face some of the same challenges that I talked about, like it in certainly in terms of visibility, again, like walking into a room full of people who do not look like you, it works for gender, and it also works for walking into a room of white people. So, and this is definitely an issue when I was talking about people, when I was talking with people while I was still in the process of writing my original article, that they definitely brought up. They were like, well, you know, historically, like, Magic does also have kind of like an across-the-board diversity problem. And so, yeah, I think it certainly exists. And again, as we just said, like, we want to help work to raise everybody up, to make everybody feel more welcome in the Magic community.
Exactly. Well, yeah.
I think, by the way, that this has been trending in the right direction, at the very least, in terms of MTG art you mentioned a little bit.
Yes.
I know that, like, for instance, when I was in middle school or whatever, and I can't even remember, I was playing, like, elves or something in with the sort of very casual Magic, not really knowing all of the rules or anything like that, but... I can't imagine the idea that a trans person would be on a Magic card, which my understanding is Ashiok is purposefully trans. That's actually was part of the design of that card.
Alesha, Alesha is, I know for sure.
Alesha is trans. Right. I thought Ashiok was like non-gendered
associated.
Gender binary. He was
okay.
Ashiok is like, you know,
Ashiok, man.
Ashiok's just Ashiok. And creepy. Ashiok is a nightmare weaver, first and foremost.
That's true. That's true.
Remember that.
With great that fingernails.
That card is a house. But in any case, the sort of just anything that isn't gender binary or trans people actually, there was a spoiler I saw today that had a black man on it. And it's just those cards just either didn't exist in some cases, or were incredibly infrequent in other cases.
And actually part of like what inspired a little bit of the, again, the visibility part of my article was when Alesha was, when they wrote her, her piece on Daily MTG and it was revealed that she's canonically trans, Aaron Campbell wrote a post to Mark Rosewater and she was, or she like tweeted at him or tweeted at Wizards. And she was like, it just like, I like, it means so much to see myself on a card. So yeah, absolutely. It's definitely something that we can work towards in all aspects of it because it's definitely meaningful to see yourself both in the community and in the artwork.
All right, next question. This is actually a direct email quote.
Yeah.
Okay, so the argument is that we need women in coverage because we want a woman in coverage. And that's a direct insult to anyone who's worked hard at the game for the sake of the game. Don't get me wrong, I'm all for the women in coverage, but I'm all for a woman representing Magic. But I think when you're deciding who does coverage, it should be based off of merit. It should be based off skill and experience. Otherwise, it unfairly biases. There's a few typos in here.
you know.
Otherwise, it unfairly biases. Is unfairly biased and sexist to be selecting people beard on gender. I think that might have been based on gender. This is pretty good. You show me a woman player who's put in the hours of Marshall Sutcliffe into limited Magic, and I'm okay with her representing the Magic players and taking that seat.
Well, first of all, like, it's not up to you to be okay with it. Like, sorry. It's you know, if we were waiting for a coverage person who everyone on the face of the planet is okay with being in coverage, we would never have anyone.
That is true.
Absolutely no one. I mean, I personally am really biased against English people, so based on my judgment, Rich Hagen should be out of there.
Whatever.
Why do they talk so weird? Rui is calling me on
his commentary is so epic.
I love Rich.
We love Rich.
I love Rich. Oh my god. He's so adorable. Anyways, so I guess like we were talking about this earlier because this one drove me a little bit up a wall because I feel like this question is like they're like it's a direct insult to anyone who's worked hard at the game for the sake of Magic. And I'm gonna say to you, I try not to get too riled up, man, but like
Megan's pretty riled right now.
I think it's insulting to suggest that there are no women who have worked hard enough at Magic that they don't deserve to be at a coverage desk. That's absolutely not true.
And I think it's from lack of knowing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you have to look at the situation that, again, as we talked about last week, kind of with like the cone of flame phenomenon, where all the way from the very beginning of Magic's origins, not to be confused with Magic Origins, the set that's coming out, back when Magic started, it was so geared towards a male audience that men have always been more visible in the game, and they've always been brought to our attention. Everyone can see the guys that are working hard because the focus has always been on the men who are working hard. And again, kind of talking about the visibility issue, like it's the women who are behind the scenes. And we were talking about this in the car earlier. I used the analogy of like, say you have two sprinters. You're trying to figure out, you know, you have one final spot on a relay team, and you're trying to figure out, you're racing two sprinters, and they're both damn fast, and they've both worked their butts off, and you let one of them start 50 meters in front of the other. It's like, I'm not saying that they're not incredibly fast sprinters, but if they're starting 50 meters ahead of their competition, like it's not a fair race.
Great analogy. And I think to directly, you know, answer this person's question, there are absolutely women who are qualified to do coverage in Magic right now who have put in as many hours as Marshall or anybody else in the booth.
Exactly. Like you're telling me that like Melissa DeTora hasn't put in the hours practicing limited that Marshall has. Like she has been on multiple pro tours. I guarantee you she has practiced like endless hours of limited Magic. Again, just as an example.
And, you know, as for being all for women in Magic, well, the point is women, you know, to get more women involved in the game or people involved in the game, I mean, we need to be represented. And we talked about this on our last episode about how representation breeds, you know, visibility, and visibility breeds more players. So,
yeah, again, I feel like this kind of objection or question just comes out of not understanding the fact that, again, like, guys who are behind the coverage desk or in positions like that are the sprinters starting 50 meters ahead of their competition. And they really are, because, again, ever since Magic started 20 plus years ago, like, that's been the target market up until, like, less than half of the game's lifetime. Have women really been, like, an intrinsic part of the Magic community?
And I think enough people are making more noise on this topic now that Wizards is beginning to hear us about this. Doc, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I sort of have a Pavlovian response to these sorts of arguments.
You start to salivate because you're so excited to just smash them into the ground. Just kidding.
Yeah, a little bit, actually. I mean, it's sort of a I got to go point by point type of thing. So the person starts out by saying that they're sort of quoting a straw man argument. We need a woman in Magic coverage because we want a woman in Magic coverage. And that's the argument that they seem to want to address here. But I think that that's a just a pure misunderstanding of what the purpose is and what the sort of call for women in coverage is, which is that we want women in coverage because we want to see that portion of what exists in the Magic's, the Gathering's base, player base, to be represented in a place where it's visible, not because it's, you know, it has merit in itself. And then it sort of proceeds on to this, it should be based off of merit and meritocracy thing. I think basically we want to, nobody's saying, oh, okay, we're going to put somebody in coverage who doesn't know what they're doing or isn't going to get a lot of this stuff right. That's not at all the argument. The argument is that there are women who have that level of skill who clear that bar, right? And I think that's what it is basically there are different styles of coverage and there are all sorts of people who do these commentaries that are good for all sorts of different reasons, but they all clear this bar. And once you've cleared that bar, it's sort of who do you pick within that? Who do you want and what, you know, pairs go well together, like Cedric Phillips and Patrick Sullivan, I personally find to be a great pair. Marshall Sutcliffe and Brian David Marshall, another great pair. You know, all the guys that do all this commentary are wonderful pairs, but that doesn't mean that it should exclude anybody who's not already a member of those pairs or not already a member of that sex.
I'm definitely not saying my super cute cats should be commentators on, you know, the next limited GP, although it would be adorable.
Yeah, I think, you know, that would be an instance of you just wanting that.
I think the community also wants that.
It not representing what's going on in the Magic community. I'm just saying,
right.
I don't know any cats that play
there
Magic.
There are a lot of...
But there are a lot of cats in... Actually, do you know what? You're right. There are a lot of cats in Magic.
Thank you.
Yeah, there's a lot of creature-type cats in Magic the Gathering. Right. There's also a lot of cats that mess up Magic games.
Yes.
By walking all over them.
Just being dicks about it. Hello, this looks important. Let me knock it over.
Oh, God. Okay, hit us with the next one.
All right. I'm a white middle-class male. What can I do to help?
Well.
Thank you, first of all.
Thank you, yes. You can just be, one, just be a wonderful, positive, affirmationing. That's the way that word is said. A wonderful, positive, affirming member of the community. To everyone, which is always an amazing place to start. But Maria, do you want to touch on a couple of the other
sure.
specifics?
Sure. I just made like a quick little list here, and this is just kind of no brainer stuff. Where if you're asking this question, you probably are not an offender of any of this sort of thing. I would say just keep in mind that you have appropriate Magic accessories for for playing the game in a diverse environment.
Yeah.
Megan and I have talked about this on the show before about seeing what do we call them, boobed out play mats or whatever.
Mostly it's butts. I feel like it's butts out play mats.
You know, it's just like, oh boy, I don't wanna see that. It makes me uncomfortable playing you. Anyway, so just check yourself on that. Vocabularily.
Jeez. Yeah, we're really doing great with the words. But
vocabulary.
Yeah, as we talked about a little bit in the article, but making sure that if you are writing, to include either you can just opt for a completely like non-gender binary pronouns, like they or them, or you can alternate between pronouns, so that again you're representing the player base, which is not exclusively male.
And it's saying stuff like making sure you don't say stuff after matches like I got, you know, R-A-P-E-E-D in that match or whatever.
Yeah, that's actually a really good one.
You know, like, that's just don't do it.
Which I always forget because I've never personally heard that one, but I've heard so many stories of people who have been like, oh, someone said this. And I'm like, are you serious? Like,
yeah.
I'm really glad that I've never personally encountered that. But there you go.
So just generally, yeah, did you want to say something, Doug?
Yeah, I know that when you say, like, gender pronouns and all that stuff. I know that I was a team captain in my team draft league or whatever this season, and I picked a female teammate, and so she's a great player. She was my first pick or whatever, and she the guys and girls who are in this league are really, you know, great people, and they don't have any sort of real problems with this, but they'll even accidentally let slip, you know, when they sort of like, because there's talking in the matches or whatever, it's team draft, so you can say like, you know, oh, what does he have, or like, do we know any instance he has or whatever, and they won't change the he to a she when they're playing against her. She's literally across the table from them.
Weird.
This has happened once or twice, and the thing is that Monique doesn't correct them, because I think she just doesn't want it to be awkward. I'm not sure why, but I like actively corrected everybody. I was like, you know, it's she, right? And they're like, oh fuck, I'm so sorry, you know.
Yeah.
Which, even though she appreciated it.
Yeah, even though you know that they didn't like intentionally do it, it's still just like nice to make people aware. If I've been accidentally pronouncing the word archipelago wrong my entire life, I really appreciate it, even though I didn't have any bad intent, that Maria took a second to correct how I said that word.
You're welcome.
Thank you. It's a real thing that's a real thing that happened.
I will say that purposely pronouncing words incorrectly is still excellent, and you should continue to do it.
Give us an example.
You guys, it's always going to be an archipelago in my heart.
Archipelago. I do things like... I'll mispronounce magic cards all the time, like Macabre, Fairy Macabre, and instead of the 3-3 blue 6/6 in Modern Masters, the rare Guile.
Guile,
or everybody, or like our personal favorite. I know you're a fan of Eugene.
Yeah. Yes.
Eugene the Spirit.
That's the correct pronunciation.
Exactly.
Yes, like, I agree.
U-G-I-N Eugene. Anyways, so yeah, and I think the most important thing that you can do is if you do have friends who are intentionally, whether just because they're tilting, whether or because they just don't know any better yet, say something derogatory, really in any situation, not just like derogatory about their opponent because they're a female or because they're a woman, but in any situation, they say something derogatory, having a conversation with them. And it can be awkward if they're your friend, but it needs to happen. And I think it's really one of the most important things that you can do. Because if you are someone who is going around saying stuff like, oh man, I got beat by a girl, or something like that, or my personal favorite that I've been told, like, oh, that's a great way to make friends. I didn't come here to do that, buddy. Right, like, they can hear me, like, they'll hear me say, hey, you, like, please don't talk to me like that. Like, that's not an acceptable way to treat your opponent. But they're already viewing me in an antagonistic light. And if one of their friends stops them and says, hey, you shouldn't talk to people like that, that has an entirely different effect on someone to hear it from someone that they know, that they respect, that they are friends with. And I think that's one of the biggest changes that you can help affect in the community.
Yeah, I agree. It, like Megan said, it's also one of the most difficult. So it's not going to be easy, especially not the first time, to make that sort of conversation happen. But you know what? Just suck it up and do it, and you'll feel probably good after you did it.
Yeah, man. And you'll
probably get thanked, too.
Yeah, exactly. So, and if you feel weird about it afterwards, send us an email, and we'll send you a virtual high five.
We sure will.
Y5.
Y5. Yes. Oh my god. Oh, next time I have to set up a new router, I'm naming it Y5.
All right, the next question, very similar. Hit it.
I'm a judge or tournament organizer. What can I do to help?
Very similar, except in this case, it's your job.
What can I do? What should I do to help?
Right.
What am I legally obligated to do to help?
Being a jerk that goes against, just to be very clear, like it's against the rules of magic to be
unsportsmanlike.
So there's always that.
So yeah, I mean, you already know this as a judge, right? Like, it is your job to enforce unsportsmanlike conduct. Yeah. Just make sure you keep your eye out for it and don't be afraid to step in or raise your voice about it. I just had another little thing on my list, which was female-friendly restrooms. I've heard, you know, horrible hell tales of restrooms with no toilet seat, no toilet paper, and no garbage can. Please make sure your restroom have all three of those things that I just mentioned.
that's nice.
Just enforce those rules just like you're supposed to.
And the same thing goes, like, I know it's difficult, especially when you have a long day of judging, because damn, those days can stretch on. And you have, you know, a million calls that you have to make and a million things you have to do. But it is, like, as a person who has been subject to people being nasty to me at a tournament, like, it really matters to the players affected.
It really matters, too. I've seen a judge call somebody out for offensive sleeves and offensive playmats as well. So that's something that, you know...
Which are also against the rules.
Yeah, right. I think don't be afraid to do that. That's just my personal belief. It makes a better play environment for me.
And for the record, it's not even just, you know, you're not even just going to offend people who are other adults that think those cards, sleeves, or playmats are like, come on. But there are actually kids who play. It's like I know that whenever I'm in like a local gaming store that has like, you know, a father son or a mother daughter or whatever couple, because I'm talking about little kids. I'm not talking about kids that come in there who are like high schoolers or whatever. They can take a fuck or a shit or whatever, etc. And they can take a bad word. But I literally completely, as though I'm talking to my grandmother, censor my language when I am around like a 8-year-old or 9-year-old, because I know that. Obviously, most parents, if not all parents, don't want their kids around that. And the same is true of your sleeves and play mats.
Absolutely.
All right, moving on.
So I'm having second thoughts about my daughter getting into magic or my female friend getting into magic. Can you help?
Don't freak out, man.
Don't freak out.
Don't freak out. They're going to make the community a better place as long as they are sportsmanlike. They are going to help grow the community. They are going to help increase visibility. Hopefully they will love the game and it will be a great addition to their life.
Yeah, I think the more young ladies, anybody, your friends, we can get involved in the game, the better. And I actually had a dad write us about the song that I played about on my ukulele.
About the skunks.
My
about
skunk skunks. Song. And it wasn't actually about skunks.
No, but they featured prominently in the song.
They did. And he said, I had a line this in the song that was like, I hope one day a little girl will say, fuck these dolls, I want to play Cryptic Command. And he said that he teared up when he heard that. And it just made me feel so happy. Like, you know what? There are those little girls out there right now.
Yeah, man.
And if we start working on these changes and working on them hard and everybody getting behind this, there'll be a whole lot more of those little girls out there.
Absolutely. They're going to be some boss control players.
Little
I would like to say, though, that just to all the little girls who are considering putting down the dolls and picking up Cryptic Commands, that you don't actually have to play blue. You can play red.
Oh, but it's
pretty great.
But blue is the color where you get to draw cards and counter other people's spells. And put that out there. I think really what we're seeing is the landscape of the future is where we battle for children to align with our personal color preferences. No,
come in, daddy with the mountain.
If you like your dad better than your mom, sweetie, you're gonna choose red.
When you're teaching them to walk, one of the parents is holding a mountain, one's holding an island. They're like, come to the mountain.
Come to the mountain. thanks so much for talking some of those questions out with us. We're gonna keep Gabe around while we talk about some sweet origin spoilers and some interesting new rules changes.
All right, Magic Origins, you guys, coming out very, very soon.
Holy crap. Like I said, like less than 2 weeks.
I know. And what? A lot of cards spoiled already.
Aw, snap.
These are like old bananas. Super spoiled.
Spoiled already.
They're like me as a young one. Spoiled already. Anyway. looking at some of these cards, let's ask you, Doc, since you're our special guest, first of all. You're primarily a limited player, is that fair to say?
That is more than fair to say.
Wonderful. Welcome. We are as well. do you have any cards that particularly piqued your interest?
Well, I definitely, the splashy rares are something that always, when you first look at it, are things that you're like, oh, wow, that's cool. But I tend to focus on commons and uncommons, especially when I sort of talk about cards from a limited set review standpoint or whatever, something like that. And a good way to analyze those cards is to look at the mechanics that are new in the set and the mechanics that go with individual colors, or sort of like the general idea of each of the colors or potential archetypes, stuff like that. So I've been looking at Renown a lot. That's on a lot of the cards that have been spoiled, and yeah, it's a mechanic that I think is going to be very, very obvious. Well, I know that it's going to be very, very a key to understanding Origins Limited, and it's something that seems like it would play really, really well, as long as it's not underpowered. There are mechanics that I'm afraid of, like, whoa, this might be overpowered. This is one where I'm afraid it might be a little underpowered.
This reminds me a lot of, oh my god, I'm already forgetting my mechanic names.
Like, Bloodthirst?
No, where you would tap to get a counter on it. Just a couple.
Outlast?
Yeah, Outlast. And that was, I remember thinking, oh, is this going to be too slow? Like, is this going to be worth it? You know what I mean? And it kind of reminds me in that way, like, is this card, if I cannot do damage with it, just completely useless?
Yeah, or the one in Theros, what was the, if you, whenever it untaps, it gets some sort of
Inspired.
Trigger. Yes, Inspired. yeah, which, like, the power level on Inspired cards was kind of all over the board. Some of them were very good, and some of them were just, like, really not worth it.
Well, I think that you bring up a good point in terms of something that makes me more afraid that some of these cards might be underpowered, is that there doesn't seem to be a way for... I mean, you've got to have a lot of way of getting these creatures through, because these creatures don't have to just tap. They have to connect, have to damage a player. Mm-hmm. So as opposed to something like Outlast, where it's literally just something you can activate at sorcery speed, it's non-interactive. And they, R&D said that when they were designing that mechanic, they thought, what can we give creatures as a thing to do besides attack and block?
Yeah.
So sorcery speed, tapping and getting bigger is something that they can do. But that was something that didn't really require any interaction with your opponent or any particular board state besides, what ended up being the sort of... ulterior motive to Outlast, which was a stalled board state.
Yeah.
But this is something that actually requires a great deal to go right for you in order for it to be activated. So there's a definite chance that these cards can be a little bit underpowered.
So there's some that are already straight up okay, like Knight of the Pilgrim's Road, which is 2 and a white for a 3/2 with Renown 1. So you would probably, already play that and just be completely fine with it. There are some that give you a special bonus, like this is a rare Relic Seeker, 1 and a white for a 2/2 with Renown 1. And then when it becomes renowned, you get to search an equipment card, put it in your hand. So, I mean, those get special bonuses, so that's fine. And Knight of the Pilgrim's Road is already, you would play a 3/2 for 3 anyway. I think there's a 1/1 that becomes renowned in this set, I believe. Maybe I'm losing my mind, but that card doesn't seem good unless I completely made it up.
That card
there's a 1/3 that is like 2 and a green, I think. Yeah, it's Valoran Wardens. It's a 1/3 for 2 and a green, renowned 2. When a creature you control becomes renowned, draw a card, which has like a potential huge upside, right? It's any creature you control becoming renowned draws you a card. But on the face, like, it doesn't pass the vanilla test. You would not play a 1/3 for 3 in your deck.
Yeah,
if it didn't say anything else on it.
I'm wondering how good Honored Hierarch will be. 1/1 for 1 green. Renown 1. And when it's renowned, it has vigilance and tap, add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool.
Yeah. I mean, if you play it on turn 1, I'm sure it's fine.
Right.
If you play it after that, things are going to get hairy.
Right. Yeah. I think... So they sort of said that they wanted to move away from 1 mana... green mana dorks,
mm-hmm.
Like Elvish Mystic, because they felt that they were a little bit too powerful and constructed, which I think is fair. Absolutely true if you've watched any sort of recent coverage on green-red devotion decks.
Mm-hmm.
Elvish Mystic is a very powerful card. This card may have gone too far the other way. And I'm not sure that... I mean, cards like Satyr Wayfinder, or not Satyr Wayfinder, Satyr, the one that untaps a land.
Voyaging Satyr.
Thank you, Voyaging Satyr. That card seems way more balanced. The 1/2 for 2 that untaps lands or a 2-mana dork seems fine.
Yeah.
But a conditional dork and one where the condition's not easy to meet.
I'm a conditional dork.
only under some circumstances.
Sometimes I'm really cool, but other times, super dork.
Under the following conditions. Yeah. This creature is kind of clunky.
Yeah, I don't. Really, I don't honestly don't know how people. I mean, maybe it'll end up getting played in standard, but geez, that's really conditional.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine drawing one of those late game?
Yeah. It's going to have a direct. I mean, it's probably only as bad as drawing an Elvish Mystic would have been late game, anyways. The thing is that, like, playing it on turn 3 is, like, not as good as playing an Elvish Mystic on turn 3, or even close. Because it's like. Even if you're like, I think that this card will be inversely proportionally as good as there are many goblins or mono red decks, so fast decks. The more one drops and two drops your opponent's playing, the worse this card gets in terms of being able to actually ramp you into something.
Absolutely.
They spoiled a card today, which I think was completely insane. Maybe not totally, totally insane, but pretty dang insane, which is Thopter Spy Network. 2 blue-blue for an enchantment at the beginning of your upkeep. If you control an artifact, put a 1/1 colorless Thopter artifact creature with token with flying onto the battlefield. Whenever one or more artifact creatures you control deal combat damage to a player, draw a card.
But it's not for each artifact.
No, Megan, what do you want? The world? Do you want the moon?
I want a Biden of Thassa.
Oh. Well, it's almost there.
Yeah. Seems reasonable.
I'm excited to put a lot of little Thopters out on my battlefield. I don't know about you, but I just want a mass of just Thopters.
sure, that's adorable.
This is the Spike conversing with Johnny.
Yep.
Yeah.
What's the female name for Johnny? Jenny?
Jenny or something? I can't remember.
That sounds right.
I know it's Tammy and Timmy.
Yeah, I'm a little there is a Johnny side to Maria for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you just want weird things to happen.
You want all of these Thopters out there?
Can you imagine? It's like, Maria, what are you going to do with all your Thopters? It's like, oh, I'll attack people for 1.
Yeah, I mean, I'm getting 1 every upkeep.
1 every upkeep.
Megan, this is basically a Bitter Blossom.
I mean, it's at the beginning of your upkeep.
Basically, Bitter Blossom has been called.
I mean,
you don't have to lose life.
No, you don't have to lose life.
And as long as you control one of the other artifact Thopters, you do get another one every time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you already control an artifact that can already hit someone, you can play this pre-combat, and on the turn you play it, draw a card.
Yes. That's
really saying something.
All right, Megan, fine. What card are you excited about?
Well, Doc, you had mentioned this one, but Archangel of Tithes, it's got a lot going on.
That is a lot of text.
Card's got a lot of words on it. 1 white, for a 3/5 flying. As long as Archangel of Tithes is untapped, creatures can't attack you or a planeswalker you control unless their controller pays 1 for each of those creatures. And as long as Archangel of Tithes is attacking, creatures can't block unless their controller pays 1 for each of those creatures. I mean, baller status.
It's basically Wells Fargo.
I wonder how much more play Brimaz will. I just breezing past that joke. just trying my best to sweep that under the rug.
Everyone ignore the Wells Fargo joke.
This, I wonder how much more play Brimaz will see because this card exists. Because, I mean, it's triple white, so you pretty much just have to be mono white.
Yeah, that's very true.
Do you think Craig Wesco is doing a little dance right now somewhere?
He's got
a little dance. But Brimaz and this Archangel are gonna be in the same set for how long? Only for a couple months.
Only for
a few months shall they know each other's company.
Right, but for the duration of the Super Standard, and I mean the most relevant tournament during that time being the Pro Tour.
Yeah.
I got to imagine that if White Weenie is any good, it's going to involve these two cards, and which they make sense, right? I mean, you can't. It makes it very difficult to block if you're going wide, and they have to pay for each of those creatures that they're blocking.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, and Brimaz making his extra cat buddy.
Yeah.
Pretty sweet.
Every
pretty
time.
Sweet deal.
I would love to see something like this make a big splash in Standard, honestly. I love when cool creatures come out to play in Standard, mm-hmm. and it's not just spell. That's just me, though. I don't know how you feel about that, Megan.
I like spell. But that's just
well,
do you
I...
Dragon Lord of Tarka creature?
I absolutely do.
Wait, consider which one? Dragon Lord of Tarka?
Dragon Lord of Tarka creature. I mean, it does say creature, but... It feels like more of a wrath.
Exactly. It says deal five damage however you want.
Yeah, it's like a creature. It's like a spell reacher. That's a combination.
Spell reacher? Okay,
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. And I know R&D is actually pushing for more creature-based standard right now. So.
And I will continue to push back.
Well, we'll see. We'll see who wins.
Pile driver is definitely a symptom of that.
Yeah, that's very true.
What a card, friends. What a card.
Look at that art on that card, too. That goblin is really pile-driving that guy. It's like a high school wrestling match where the two weight classes were ignored.
Put them all together.
The little guy is winning.
Yeah.
Who cares? No, you're right, actually, because the goblin would technically be smaller than that person. Yeah. So it's where the weight classes were ignored and the underdogs had their day.
But we've got a lot of, we seem to have a elf theme happening here in Origins, which is kind of cool, because I've never played in a set that had an heavy elf theme ever before.
Yeah, I'm really happy that Elvish Visionary is here, because what more can you really want than to draw a card with your creature?
I don't know, Megan, maybe smash somebody's face with that creature?
Oh, I think you meant to say draw two cards. You're right, drawing two cards is better.
We could have this fight all day.
That was definitely my answer.
Is there anything else that caught your eye you wanted to talk about, Doc?
It just caught my ear that you never play any sets that were heavy elf themed. You miss Lorwyn?
Yes, very much to my chagrin, being the person who is in love with Wales and Welsh mythology as much as I am, I missed Lorwyn. Oh boy.
So good.
Someday we'll get to go back, probably.
Format.
You know, I feel like Modern Masters 1 was sort of a return to Lorwyn in a way, and I, you know, obviously loved the first Modern Masters. I would love to go back to Lorwyn. I mean, I'm not playing around. You guys, wizards, hey, put on your ears. Go back to Lorwyn. Love, Maria. Okay, thank you.
Take off your ears again. They're fine.
Okay. Yeah, did you really love Lorwyn when it was out as well?
Oh, it's my favorite limited format of all time. It was so good. People's main accusation against it is the same one that they have against Modern Masters, which it kind of feels samey after a while because there's only a couple of archetypes or whatever. But I don't know. I think you can kind of combo those archetypes in a way that those players didn't really try to do, or maybe they just like they got frustrated with it early and so they sort of gave up on it. But I just absolutely love limited formats that have very defined archetypes and focus more on the way that you play the games and making sure that you can read your signals properly to make sure that you get rewarded with the right cards.
Yeah, I have to say, I think I definitely prefer archetype-heavy drafting as well. Because it's nice, also, like, within archetypes, there's flexibility. And it leads to interesting games.
And I think something else that I just noticed going over the set, we still have 5 mana, kill your dude, is where we're at. For paying for that in this set,
so
right?
Much mana.
We have Unholy Hunger for 3 black to destroy target creatures. It is instant and has spell mastery tacked onto it, but that's what we're paying these days.
Yeah, that's all right. All right.
While we're on black, I can't help, even as a limited player, bring up the dang nation, the darnation, Languish.
What?
Like not quite Damnation.
Where is it? I haven't seen this one.
Languish is oh my goodness. This is like one of the most constructed playable cards that's so far come out of the set is two black sorcery. All creatures get -4/-4 until end of turn. It's not quite Damnation.
I call it the stinky crocodile.
I mean, that's what it looks like. You're calling it what it looks like. No, that's pretty sweet.
You're right. That card's insane.
I love me a good Wrath Man.
But it's I mean, so there are people that are like, well, this is just a strict upgrade from Damnation because it leaves around your Tassigar or whatever, and it's like, well, yeah, but it also leaves around their Tassigar. So you have to sort of think of like, this is just a separate card, and there are instances where this card will be much better, and there are instances where Damnation will be much better, but you can't know all of those just by sort of immediately evaluating the card off the top of your head. You have to sort of think a little bit deeper about it. But
it certainly will get around friends like Monstrous Fleecemane Lions. They're sure dead.
True. Yeah, for the duration of Super Standard, that card will be probably the best answer to that.
Which is pretty sweet.
I'm excited to play Origins preview coming up. As we said, next week we're going to go over these cards more in depth with Judge Rob. And looking forward to seeing you play some sweet, sweet Origins draft on your stream, Doc.
Well, yeah, I definitely will be playing a lot of this set, but I'm glad you have a judge coming on because I don't actually know anything about these cards.
Tune in next week. We will give you the lowdown and the skinny. The skinny lowdown.
That's the kind of jeans I'm wearing right now.
Jeez.
It just sounds dirty. It also just sounds dirty.
I was like, is that like a drink? I'll have a skinny lowdown on the rocks.
Oh, God.
So some big changes happened today in the Magic world, or big potential changes.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the biggest ones coming around the mountain, as they say.
Nobody says that.
No. Okay. Is that mulliganing. They're going to try this at Pro Tour Origins. Just kind of see how it goes and decide from there.
It's like a first date.
Yeah, exactly. They're giving it a trial run.
Mm-hmm.
Of mulliganing, if you mulligan, they use way fancier language than I'm about to. But basically, if your starting hand is less than 7 cards, you may scry 1 before the game begins.
Ah! That's so cool.
So there you go. And it's determined it's done the exact same order that mulligans are. So it's like if you're on the play and your opponent's on the draw, maybe all like you mulligan to 6, they mulligan to 6. You draw your 6, they draw their 6, you're both fine. You'll scry 1, they'll scry 1.
So it's like in your upkeep, it's like before the game?
I believe so.
You're correct, yeah. Yeah. It's everything that's the same about the pre-game mulligan rules, and then they tacked on the sentence, then beginning with the starting player and proceeding in turn order, any player whose opening hand has fewer cards than his or her starting hand size may scry 1.
Sweet. So your starting hand size is
always 7, and opening hand size whatever you've mulliganed to.
Whatever you ended up with, buddy.
So this is Wizards, attempt with the, I think, maybe pressured by the popularity of Hearthstone, which is much kinder to mulligans than Magic is, to kind of help people out, because they were saying that games that were completely uninteractive because of bad mulligans and bad hands were no fun for either player. So what is something we can do?
Or for people watching.
Or for people watching coverage. What can we do to maybe give them a little bit of a leg up? So they tested this out. They're going to take it on a test run for Pro Tour Origins. And then we're going to see if it gets implemented after that. I'm really excited about it, though, because this is like kind of the second giant rules change that's happened while we've been playing the game, the first being the Legends rule.
Yeah.
So it'll be neat to see if it actually sticks around or not.
Absolutely. Doc, how are you feeling about this change?
So I tweeted that I was grouchy old manning about it, but I think that's not actually the case. I was sort of being facetious. I think this is a good change, potentially. I have reservations about it, and I think that the positive change of it is that it's absolutely something where it'll allow people to have more, cracking starts to the game, both on coverage and off. You'll have more games that feel more interactive. I don't sort of wish my opponent good luck and have fun or high five or whatever at the beginning of games just to sort of say it. I actually, the best kinds of games of Magic are the kind where both players start with 7 cards, play their lands on time, play spells, have decision trees, and the player who's chosen the best decision tree wins. That is something that doesn't happen when somebody mulligans to 3 or 4 often. That said, winning on a mulligan to 4 or 3 feels pretty godlike. It's tough to top that. But this is going to reduce the amount that that's a problem. I also am a very aggressive keeper. I'm much further on the Gerard Fabiano LSV side of the mulligan scale. So this will just make me a much better player because I'll keep keeping those hands and they'll turn out better. It's great.
Yeah. And I didn't even originally think of it like this, but someone was talking about it, I think just on Twitter, and it was like, oh, the biggest change where you'll see this is not like the slight advantage that you'll now get if you mulligan to 5 or you'll mulligan to 4, like the slight advantage where you were previously in that situation, but the number of times that you will hopefully be able to keep a 6 card hand because you have just a slightly better chance of, as they say, getting there. Which is super interesting.
Yeah, as opposed to round the mountain, people actually do say getting there.
I don't know what you're saying. Those are equally popular phrases.
Some people have mentioned that in this will kind of take a different tack, perhaps in Modern or something, when it comes to combo decks, making combo decks much better that rely on their pieces a lot more than some other decks, and scrying will help them out, give them an unfair advantage. I don't know if that's true.
Well, combo decks are notoriously weak to mulligans because, again, you always, no matter what the combo, you do need to assemble a certain number of pieces. And if you have one fewer card in your hand, you're just less likely to assemble those pieces.
Right. Joe Lissette was playing Serum Powder in his Goryeo's Vengeance deck at the Invitational or some other Star City Games tournament recently, literally just to avoid mulliganing so much.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And that was one of my reservations was combo decks, but the other one, and I don't play Modern or any of those formats nearly enough to say this with authority, so this is sort of just a shot in the dark, but it seems like this is pretty good for Delver decks.
Yeah, that's true. If you have a good old Delver of Secrets, you get to scry one. Yum.
Yeah, so perhaps this will be implemented piecemeal. I mean, I don't think that's what Wizard wants to do, but who knows? Maybe it will be only applied to limited formats. I don't know. It seems like a bad idea, but who knows?
Right. Applying it piecemeal seems like a bad idea.
Right.
I think that if they apply it, it will be across the board.
I would think so, too. But somebody said, oh, maybe it'll just be limited, and I don't think they'll do that. But.
No, absolutely.
Anyway, so one of the other big things that happened is two things having to do with video coverage. Number one, the head judge can now review video of matches in an aid to an investigation of any rules violations that may have occurred.
Which I think, people have talked about it being like an unfair advantage to people who are playing on camera, but I think that that's just silly.
Cave is laughing.
Yeah. Well, when it comes down to advantage, like, it's not about advantages. It's about being able to make the best decision for that match that you possibly can. And it's like, if you're able to make a better judge call based on video footage, then I want
Megan.
To make the best judge
call. No, we will only allow sketch artists to sketch the game of Magic, and the judge may look at the courtroom sketch.
Look, I think that we should call in the typist's records. We've had someone transcribing this on a typewriter, and I want to look over the notes.
Can I get the, typewriter, the stenographer's notes on, Owen Turtenwald playing Magic by himself? Because I've heard that's really good. I've heard he just sits in a room by himself.
Yes, let's spread the rumors.
This is very much hearsay, but the sitting in your room by yourself, just, I am such gas.
Are you sure that wasn't in the bathroom?
You know what? People have laptops.
Yeah. Sometimes I wonder what percentage of my players are pooping while I'm playing them on Magic Online.
Oh, well, don't worry, you guys. I know Owen Turtenwald's stenographer, so I'll write to him.
Thank you.
I'll write to him and see.
The other big change.
No offense, by the way, to Owen. I'm in awe of your skill in magic, and you are such gas. So it's fair.
It is. The other big change was card layout in video coverage. So you may have heard us on the show. I'm gonna take credit for this decision.
Sure, go for
Megan.
It.
Yeah. We complained.
It's all you, baby.
We complained about the fact that some players, including LSV, who was just trolling everybody, played with their lands in front the old school way, including some players who are very popular and really nice people. And I'm being kind of mean right now by saying that they shouldn't. But the thing was that coverage, if they played their lands in front, it was not uniform, right? So some feature mashes would have the traditional layout, which is, lands in back these days. And sometimes people put their lands in front and all sorts of other shenanigans. Well, now they've said,
goddamn, no. Madness.
It was madness out there, Megan. Mm-hmm. So they've said, no more. We will have this regulated. Because it is a coverage match, we want everybody who is watching to not be more confused than they need to be if they're trying to learn the game of magic. So creatures must be in front of lands and nothing can be behind lands. Let it be written.
Not even the players. The players need to be beside the lands.
All untapped cards in play must face the controller of that card. That was another one that I've seen.
Adrian Sullivan rule.
Let's just call it what it is.
The Adrian Sullivan clause.
And then they've basically regulated all the other areas of the battlefield. But there you have it.
Yeah. Now when you watch it, you won't be like, what's going on? If you're a grandma, that's how you sound.
I really hope there's a grandma who watches.
Well, I'm sure there's some.
Well, no, they were actually just talking about this at the Open. I guess it was the Columbus Open? I'm not sure. Baltimore maybe? Yeah, Baltimore Open the other day. Brad Nelson calls his grandma every time he has a feature match, and she watches.
That's adorable.
My mom has come in when I've been watching like coverage or even just streamers, and she's like, So is that the other cards, the other person on the other side of this game? Is that the other cards? Are those his cards? Anyway, it's ridiculous.
Oh, does your mom know me?
She may have caught your face on my television once or twice.
She is up too late.
Yeah, right. Oh God! Well, that's the latest news coming down from the mothership. Everybody, we're gonna wait and see if mulligans get changed or if they stay the way they've always been. Stay tuned to Magic the Amateuring for all your latest magic news.
That's right, we get it hot off the presses.
And grandma voice is getting some usage today.
Yeah, what's this grandma doing in this newsroom?
Look here, mister. I started working in this newsroom as a news girl. Have you ever seen the film Newsies?
Yeah, like 100 times.
It's about my life.
Which one were you?
I was the tall, lanky man, but I was a woman. They changed my character.
You do know that those people just sold newspapers. They didn't write them.
But that's what they show you in the movie, but they don't tell you what happened afterwards. I went on to rat newspapers.
Oh. Open the gates and seize the day. Sorry, everybody.
What just happened?
Have you ever seen Newsies?
Yeah, yes. Okay. But when I repeat my question.
I've made up an alternate timeline for the film Newsies in which the main character was actually a woman and went on to write newspapers.
Yeah, move over, Christian Bale.
That's right. It is Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Is that who you want to play you in a movie?
Absolutely. Oh, God.
Oh, my 100%. God. It is who's going to play you
it really
in a movie.
Is. Not to brag, but I have in my life had a Maggie Gyllenhaal haircut. I took a photo of her into my stylist and was like, give me this haircut.
Megan, who will play me in a movie of our life doing this podcast when we have the film of our lives?
Sean Connery.
Thank you. Well, thanks everybody for listening. This is Sean Connery signing off for
Sean Connery. Why do you have a bunch of marbles in your mouth?
Listen, honey, I just ate a peanut butter sandwich.
Maria, we're not talking about Sean Connery as trying to voice Daffy Duck. Like that's not who we're talking about.
I can't believe my impression. Even I am shocked by how bad that was.
That was really, like, appallingly bad.
It wasn't close.
Oh, God. Thank you so much, Doc, for coming on and being our white male landowner and for giving us your insights on everything else we talked about today.
No problem. Thanks for having me. I got to have you two on the stream sometime so you can commentate my my terrible plays, you know, Sean Connery and old newsy lady accent.
Oh, man. She would 100% make an appearance.
Oh, yeah, for sure. We would love to. Hey, if people want to find you, where can they find you?
So I stream at twitch.tv/sgdoc. That's SG Doc.
Wait, what does the SG stand for, by the way?
Great. So I've made it a sort of game who has the most creative guesses. I've had Silly Goose, Septuagenarian Gasoline. I've had Sorta Good. I've had some pretty ridiculous ones, but it was a gaming organization I was a part of a long time ago, Severity Gaming. It's kind of back in my WoW days, but at the very end of them.
Oh, so it's not Soup Gentleman.
Soup Gentleman, no.
Oh, drat.
That's a good one, though.
Drat.
Oh, yeah, everybody check out his stream late nights. It's wonderful to kind of just watch and then slowly drift off into dreamland with...
A disturbing number of people fall asleep to my voice. It's true.
You're like the Sandman.
That's a good. You've got a good voice. You've got a future old news woman there.
Yeah, I have a future in old newsery.
Yeah, exactly.
If you guys want to listen to our show more, or you know, forever, the rest of your lives, you can find us on the internet at magicthamaturing.com, mtgcast.com, themeatery.org, as well as iTunes and Stitcher. You can follow us on Twitter at mtacast. You can support the show if it's something that you find enjoyable that has contributed to your life being better in any way. Head to patreon.com/mtacast. Megan's playing with a jar of sand. Did you spill it everywhere?
No, I didn't spill it anywhere, and it smells awful.
Well, somewhere. I think it's made of, like, sand and oil.
It's gross. Pack it, pull it, shape it, love it.
Sand.
That's weird.
Yeah, it's
my sister gave it to me for Christmas.
A typical sister gift, man.
Well, be sure to join us next week, everybody, for our Judge episode. We're going over Magic Origin stuff. Until that time, Megan.
Peace out, motherfuckers.